Welcome back to Healthy Conversations. Today's guest is Mike Sanborn. He is the president and CEO of Baylor Scott & White here in Tarrant County. Today, we take a deep dive into his time at McKesson, coming up as a pharmacist, and becoming a hospital administrator. We discuss how employers and employees can be better consumers of healthcare and direct contracting. Enjoy.
Matt McGee is an employee of Frost Insurance. All opinions shared by Matt or guests of the Healthy Conversations podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Frost Insurance or Frost Bank. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for insurance, banking, or investment advice. Healthy Conversations with Matt McGee is brought to you by Straight Up Podcasts.
This is Mike Sanborn, and the opinions that I've expressed on this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not represent necessarily the opinions of the Baylor Scott & White healthcare system.
Thank you, Mike, for coming on. Let's jump right on in. So let's start with, what is your story and kind of how you got into healthcare and how you became a CEO of a local health system?
All right. Thank you, Matt, for having me. I'm actually a pharmacist by training. I wanted to be in healthcare all my career. Initially wanted to be a physician, but liked the practice of pharmacy and had a number of mostly leadership roles in pharmacy. I'd probably kill folks if I tried to fill prescriptions and stuff like that nowadays, but had a lot of administrative roles and ultimately ended up as essentially the chief pharmacy officer for the Baylor Scott & White system back in 2003. And in that role, really kind of managed all of the pharmacy operations for the whole system. And shortly after that, moved into the doing a similar type of role, but for all of cardiovascular services within Baylor Scott & White. And did that for about 5 years and really enjoyed it when an opportunity came up to be the chief executive officer at our hospital in Carrollton. And did that for 5 years, and then now have been at our All Saints facility, a nearly 600-bed facility at here in Fort Worth.
So I was looking at your LinkedIn and saw you worked a couple years at McKesson. What mm-hmm. was that kind of like? And obviously, PBMs have come under fire in the past couple months. What are your kind of thoughts on, have they changed from when you were doing it, or has the business kind of just evolved?
My McKesson years were really good ones. We were, I was in somewhat of a consulting arm for the McKesson organization for about 5 years. And it's obviously a Fortune 10 company, mm-hmm. huge organization, and really provides a lot of services from pharmaceutical purchasing to PBM services to now even they own a large physician group. And so, you know, have come certainly both vertically and horizontally integrated. On the PBM side of things, definitely the landscape has changed quite a bit over the years. Certainly since I've been there, there's been a lot of market consolidation. And really, I think now there's about three major PBM players. And the concept behind PBMs, I think, is an outstanding one, having been a pharmacist, because it really is all about formulary management. And really, you know, there, drugs in certain categories are certainly could be considered commodities because mm-hmm. they do the same thing. Side effects are relatively similar. It really comes down to then, can you strike a bargain with a particular manufacturer to see if you can ultimately drive value for the patient and reduce costs for the patient? And that's, I think, the fundamental thought behind the concept of PBMs, is hiring them as a negotiator for drug prices. I think there certainly have been some challenges. There's a lot of controversy and conversation about PBMs and how they drive value with mm-hmm. rebates and things like that. I don't know if I have a very strong opinion about that, because I think PBM services are like a lot of other services. If they're ultimately driving value for the customer, mm-hmm. and in this case, the customer can be a large employer, it can be a health plan, it can be a lot of different things, then I think it's really up to that customer to decide whether the payment structures and all of that are make sense to them, and if the overall value equation makes sense to them. So,
absolutely. You mentioned an interesting point of McKesson owning a physician group. We've talked about this, of insurance companies getting into that business. Do you see that just as like a natural evolution, or is that something you would prefer to fight, or kind of what are your thoughts on United's getting into?
Some of the mergers have been quite interesting. I think a lot of people are really trying to look at, over time, how some of these are going to involve or evolve. I think a lot of the integration that you're seeing and the consolidation that you're seeing is a natural evolution of healthcare in the United States the way it exists today. I'm not necessarily for it or against it. Mm-hmm. I think there is absolutely value in some companies. Ultimately, what it comes down to is they're trying to control aspects of healthcare that prior to acquiring whatever entity it is, whether it's a physician group or a pharmaceutical manufacturer, whatever it might be, they're trying to control something that previously was out of their control. And control is not necessarily a bad word. In a lot of ways, it's around collaboration and, mm-hmm. and working with those groups. And so, for example, it's in the acquisition of a physician group, I think a lot of companies are really trying to help drive down cost, because the cost of healthcare, I think most people would say, is too much in the United States. And the providers are a key way to have some influence on what those costs are and what the decisions are that are made. It's no different than, for example, my brother in completely different industry in mm-hmm. grain fumigation. 10 years ago, he had an opportunity to be one of five licensors for a fumigation label and was able to manufacture his own. He doesn't sell it to anyone. He just acquired that company because it gave him an opportunity to reduce his costs, and then he ultimately was able to reduce costs to the customers that he served. I think the same is true for a lot of these organizations. It's ultimately around cost reduction.
For a system like Baylor that's all over the state, like, you are the CEO of a local market, correct?
Correct.
And do you guys have control in who you expand within that market, or how does that work, or does Baylor make those decisions at the corporate level in Dallas, or how does that typically work out for, say, you wanted to expand with the physician group here in Fort Worth? What does that look like?
So I think it's like a lot of things. One of the things I love about Baylor Scott & White is, as individual entities, we have a tremendous amount of autonomy.
Yeah, that's cool.
Every market is, it's like politics and many other things. It's very local. Mm-hmm. You could love a particular healthcare system, but if your local hospital doesn't provide good care, then you're probably not going to use that large health system. Likewise, within Baylor Scott & White, there's certainly a recognition of that. And so it's always a discussion. So, for example, we're approached not infrequently by physician groups that have decided that it might be better for them to align with a particular healthcare organization. And we'll start those discussions, and there's always a fair amount of both local discussion with those individual providers as well as a corporate discussion, because the actual employment of those providers via the corporate practice of medicine laws in the state of Texas require that the employment be technically and legally separate from the hospital. And so there's always a little bit of partnership and back and forth within Health Texas Provider Network, which is the Baylor entity that employs physicians, because it's not the individual hospital that employs the physicians. And so those discussions are always kind of a three-party minimum discussion as to how it relates to the ultimate setup of how that physician practice is owned. But like the hospitals, I would say a lot of those physician practices are also allowed a tremendous amount of autonomy based on the communities in which they work, because mm-hmm. every community is a little bit different as far as what they need, whether it be more primary care needs versus specialist needs and other things like that. And so there always has to be a significant amount of community-based decision-making, mm-hmm. and Baylor Scott & White certainly recognizes that.
And, obviously, working for a nonprofit is very different. Could you kind of describe what that's like?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked for both for-profit and not-for-profit organizations in my career. I think certainly I enjoy, on the healthcare side of things, working for a not-for-profit entity for a variety of reasons. One of the big ones is we don't have shareholders to commit to and to ultimately respond to. Our shareholders are the public at large and essentially the communities that we serve, the patients and future patients. And so for me, what is unique, I think, about not-for-profit healthcare is any dollar that we make is reinvested into the facility and reinvested into the communities that we serve via new services and new programs, outreach, wellness, all kinds of other programs that might not otherwise be available or be possible if we weren't allowed to have that reinvestment. And so that's something I've certainly enjoyed and really, I think, relish as it relates to the not-for-profit environment.
Healthcare is going to be a big topic in the upcoming election. What do you see as kind of the biggest challenges? I mean, from a broker standpoint, it's obviously the cost and things like that from an employer standpoint, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the federal government, certainly not so much the state government. I think the state government kind of has a little bit more logical approach, but the federal government a lot of times tries to look for large solutions to complex problems rather than, I think, chipping away at some of the opportunities that everybody, regardless of your political persuasion, would agree is a problem and trying to fix that smaller problem rather than, you know, some big, massive program. So for a perfect example is with the ACA. Parts of that have been dismantled. Parts of it, most would argue, weren't that great. But lots of other parts, like eliminating pre-existing conditions, was a fantastic program. Why not just pass a bill that eliminates pre-existing conditions and solve that problem rather than try to create a huge program that really, you know, even to this point, a lot of states are not on board with the ACA, Texas being one of those states that really didn't sign on with a lot of the provisions of the ACA. And you can debate the value of that decision all day long. But I think there would have been ways at the margins focusing on some of the more important things to the healthcare consumer for the federal legislation to really make a positive difference and to really have a big impact rather than looking for a big omnibus bill that's going to solve or try to solve every single problem.
Makes sense. Along that idea of small solutions and chipping away at that problem, what would you recommend for an average consumer here in Tarrant County to kind of become a better consumer, as well as like any recommendations for employer groups that you've seen?
Well, I think on the consumer side of things, healthcare is one of those services that most people, the public, really doesn't pay much attention to until they ultimately need it or until a family member of theirs needs that service. And I think that's really unfortunate because a lot of times healthcare needs are emergent. So you break a leg or you have a heart attack or, you know, something significant and emergent happens and all of a sudden you've got seconds or minutes to make a decision. And a lot of times that includes appropriately calling 911. And so in those cases, your decision may not even be made by you. A EMS provider, certainly here in Tarrant County, will ask you, do you have a preferred facility? And unless you've done some homework in advance, you may or may not even have a preferred facility or a cardiac surgeon if you have a heart attack or a cardiologist. And so I think people, the public needs, consumers in general, need to really think about healthcare decisions and what they would want to do and where they would want to go and talk to their primary care physician if they have one. Hopefully everyone has one, but talk to their primary care physician about, you know, if I ever need a cardiologist, who would you recommend or who are the three or four that you think I should look at? Not that you ever would, but especially if you've got a family history or any kind of, you know, predetermined issues that might think, you know, higher cancer risk in your family or anything like that, you might want to look into oncology and oncology services in Tarrant County. And what are the other resources that I might need to consider as it relates to the services I might need? I think doing that homework on the front end, even though you may never, ever need it, is really valuable. I think likewise with employers, kind of looking at it from a different perspective, employers, I think, also need to do that homework, talk to peers that might be in a similar type of environment, you know, a similar type of workforce, for example, whether it be young or old or highly skilled, less skilled, whatever it might be. But talk to peer organizations to say, hey, how are you tackling this problem? And I think certainly through the chamber and a lot of other venues, you can develop those relationships and have those conversations. And I think, again, doing the homework, you may not be in the market to change insurance providers or change make major changes as it relates to the health plan that year. But doing the homework in advance is a lot easier than saying, oh my gosh, here it comes. Now we got to start this process. So I think that pre-planning, whether you're a consumer or an employer, is highly valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Along the same lines of doing your homework and kind of price transparency, things like that, there's a ton of tools out there, but I know a lot of employees as well as employers have trouble when it does come to price transparency. I guess as a provider, kind of, can you shed some light on that or tools that we could be using to become better consumers?
Yeah, I think there's two things. There's what's available now and what's going to be available. I think both the state legislature and the federal government is looking at more legislation related to price transparency, which is a good thing. I think overall price transparency is an outstanding thing. As a consumer of healthcare from time to time, even though I'm in the business, I typically never know exactly what a procedure is going to cost or who all the providers are that were involved in that procedure mm-hmm. and what the various bills are going to be. And so healthcare, even for those of us that live it every day, is very, very confusing. And I think likewise for both consumers and employers, it's very, very confusing. So D Magazine, about a month or two ago, published a document that showed what it cost at various facilities around DFW for a knee replacement surgery. Pretty common procedure. Mm-hmm. And it was a fourfold difference depending on where you went for knee replacement surgery. And so I think there are more and more tools out there nowadays that allow patients to shop around, that allow employers to shop around and better understand what the costs are that are going to be rolled up into a health plan. And I think in the very near future, there's going to be even more in that with some of the state and federal mandates that occur related to price mm-hmm. transparency. So I think the more, for example, a good example in a smaller scale is urgent care. Most urgent cares you go to now are one-stop shop. You may have one or two fees, but generally speaking, you know you're going to walk in there and they will tell you right up front, you're going to pay $30 for this visit or $40. Mm-hmm. And if you need an x-ray, you're going to pay an additional $60 or whatever that number is based on what your health plan covers. We need to get to that, I think, for all types of healthcare, and I think eventually we will.
One of the things we talked about a couple months back was bundled pricing. Mm-hmm. Is that along the same lines of, all right, you've got this knee replacement, why can't that just be a bundled fee? Do you see that kind of coming in the future as well?
I do. Most people don't know this, but hospitals are already paid that way. Most of the, certainly Medicare started what they called the DRG, the diagnosis-related group, where you get a tiered payment based on acuity. Usually there's three levels for a DRG, three different DRGs for an individual disease, say pneumonia. Mm-hmm. You're going to get paid one price for that no matter how much you spend on a particular patient, no matter how much the cost of care is for that particular patient. And so hospitals have been living under that model for a long time. Most insurance companies have moved to that type of pricing. And so I think then the next iteration of that is to push that down to the consumer level, because we all know pretty much what it costs on average to deliver care for pneumonia for a patient, depending on the three different types of pneumonia a patient can have from a severity perspective. So why can't we then push that out to the patient as it relates to ultimate pricing for services? I think we're pretty close to it. I think most healthcare organizations, certainly now much more than they did a decade ago, have a better idea on what the overall costs are. We've developed standardized protocols that provide the best care for every patient every time, regardless of what's wrong with them. And so we've done a lot on the quality side to eliminate bad outcomes and things like that, just mm-hmm. across healthcare as an industry. And I think the organizations that are able to do that the best are going to be able to better provide the most cost-effective care for patients and health plans down the road.
Absolutely. We're seeing a lot of employers go to a reference-based pricing model where they're taking away the networks and things like that. And with that comes direct contracting. I mean, for a mid-sized employer, say 200 to 500 employees, are they able to come to a Baylor and do direct contracting? Or is that something you need to be 1,000 plus? Or how do you guys look at direct contracting?
So we do a lot of direct contracting and more all the time. And it's exactly what you said. It's really the employer demand that's mm-hmm. looking for an alternative. Can we cut out a middleman with a large insurance company and go direct to the provider? And that works really well in a state like Texas or in certainly a region like DFW, where you've got great providers that can potentially offer that service. So with us, that was part of the big benefit of the Scott & White merger several years ago, in that Scott & White had a health plan. And we've dramatically expanded that health plan. We just acquired another smaller health plan out in Western Texas to continue the opportunities there. But we can contract with employers from 2 to 50 or 50 to much, much larger. You know, we've signed an agreement with Dallas Area Rapid Transit, the DART Association, for providing insurance to those patients and to those employees. Ultimately, they might be patients. And so employers are finding a lot of value because I think what we've been able to demonstrate, we've certainly done this. I am a member of the Scott & White Health Plan. That's who my insurer is as an employee of Baylor Scott & White. And they provide great service and ultimately over time have proven to reduce costs. I think most employers are just looking, can you just maintain my costs for a little while, for a year or two, rather than seeing double-digit increases year over year. We've actually been able to reduce costs by something like 1.7% over a year's time with some providers and reduce the cost of hospital expenditures, reduce the cost of overall healthcare-related problems that a lot of employers see. And I think that's what employers generally need to look at when they're looking at potentially direct contracting is who do you want to contract with? Can they do it? What does that fit with the size of the employee group that I've got? And then most importantly, what are the results? And I think that ultimately will allow them to make an informed decision as it relates to health plans. And, you know, there's not as many, but there should be more rating agencies and things like that. But our health plan recently was one of only two in Texas for our Medicare Advantage program to be ranked by U.S. News and World Reports as an outstanding program. And so there are some other national cues and probably some regional ones as well that might help employers make that choice. But ultimately, I think it comes down to a decision with the individual provider and what they can drive for the work for the individual employer's workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how long does that process typically take? And how early should a broker or an employer group be in contact with Baylor? Is it 3 months? Is it 2 years?
It's in between that number, probably. I think probably a 9 to 6 month window is probably ideal for a variety of reasons. You know, I think a lot of times, if you go on our website for the Scott & White Health Plan, I think they offer 100 plus plans, different plans to allow organizations to tailor it. But you can actually see some of the most popular plans and what those rates look like for individual employees and things like that. I think a lot of other programs probably offer something similar. But the company needs to figure out what the best plan is for them. But then you've also got a fair amount of employee messaging that needs to occur. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm always amazed with is how little employees pay attention to benefits until it's benefit enrollment time and you've made some kind of change. And it could just be a minor change, like a smoking penalty or something like that. But all of a sudden, employees get really excited about, okay, now this is what my company is offering. And so I think the more you can get on the front of that so that you have an appropriate amount of time for employee education and discussion, the better. And I think ultimately it'll help you overall as an employer provide a better plan for your employees. I mean, the only reason employee insurance exists in the United States is because of wage and price controls back in World War II. You know, that's how everybody asks, well, why does it in the U.S.? Why is that the only place where employers provide insurance? It was a benefit. And I think most employers today still want their employees to view health insurance as a tremendous benefit in addition to salary. And so that's a big part of that time frame is making sure that with the benefit provider and the employer can get together and find something that really drives value for the employees so that they view it as a real benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely probably one of the biggest challenges we face outside of cost is simply educating the employees on the benefits and getting them to use them properly.
Yep.
I had Dr. Bricker on in the first episode. One of the biggest things he stressed was kind of the importance of having doctors on salaries like the Mayo Clinic, things like that. I was just curious if you knew offhand how many at Baylor were on salary or if it's predominantly a fee-for-service model.
That's another thing that has a lot of market variation. So, for example, in legacy Scott & White facilities, the vast majority of physicians under that model are employed.
Okay.
They certainly work with community doctors each and every day that aren't employed, that are individual and private, but that is the model that developed certainly in Temple and kind of beyond into the Scott & White Health Plan. You move into Dallas-Fort Worth market, you see more employment on the Dallas side than you do on the Fort Worth side for us. And so, you know, as far as an overall number, I don't even know if I could exactly say what that is.
For sure.
I will tell you it's growing for sure in any market, in all of our markets, because there are very few individually practicing physicians anymore. And so what you end up with, and this is certainly true in Tarrant County, a lot of smaller private practice groups. So groups of four or five or six physicians, in most cases, in a similar type of practice. So a cardiology group or a gastroenterology group, that kind of thing. But those groups, a lot of times over time, grow for the same reason that all of businesses grow. It allows for economies of scale. And so you've a lot of times for a practice of 10 or 20, your back office may be the same. It may not be any different at all. So if you can add an additional 10 providers, still have the same, generally speaking, the same administrative costs, then that's better for everybody involved. And ultimately, you can lower costs to the patients that way and be more competitive. And so I think certainly when you – there was a poll done recently with newly graduating physicians from residency programs, and the majority – of those new physicians expected and actually preferred to be employed by a healthcare organization. And so I think that is the way things are moving. And I think there will be a time where we're going to see, you know, way more than the majority in every market that will be employed. But a lot of that has to do with most physicians love the practice of medicine. They hate the administrative practice of medicine. They do not like that at all. They're not good at it typically. They have to hire people to do it. They're worried about all the other challenges that they have. And so if they can join a healthcare organization that provides great administrative support for them and focus on the practice of medicine, then their life is better. Their work-life balance is better. Everything about their practice is better. And so I think that's part of the reason why Dr. Bricker talks about that, because it also allows organizations to align everyone working towards improvement in patient health. And that's harder to do when you're working with individual practices that may not be incentivized as much to really focus on employee health and wellness.
Absolutely. Speaking of Dr. Bricker, when I asked him kind of any bold predictions, he pretty much highlighted that there will be change, but it'll be extremely slow. Would you kind of reiterate that, or do you have any that you can speak to?
Yeah, I think there's some exciting things that are going on. As a pharmacist, Amazon's recent acquisition of PillPack is pretty interesting to me. I remember 20 years ago, when PillPack was kind of a dream for a few folks, and I think that that technology originated out of Canada. Now it's become a standard, and it's now almost two decades later, finally acceptable and even marketable by a big company like Amazon for a way to take care of mom's medicines who's got on 10 different things and has a hard time figuring out what to take every day and when to take it. And so I think transformational change and disruptive change a lot of times happens to people when they're not paying attention, to companies when they're not paying attention, whether it's the iPhone or any other major technology. It doesn't happen overnight. Consumer adoption doesn't happen overnight. Dr. Bricker talked about the bell-shaped curve. The same is true with any kind of healthcare technology. There's typically your early adopters, and then you've got the masses, and then you've got the late adopters. And I think it's those late adopters that tend to get smoked as it relates to, oh my gosh, when did this happen? And all of a sudden we're out of business. I don't see anything major like that that's going to happen. Certainly regulatory shifts can happen a lot faster and all of a sudden change things. But even with that, we tend to have at least a few years of advance notice that something, a bill is working through the pipeline and may or may not get passed. And it forces us to think a little bit different way, even if it doesn't pass. What would we have done? How would we have responded? How would we have reacted? And I think the better organizations are constantly focused on what's going on, what are the environmental cues, what's going to affect us next year, but more importantly, what's going to potentially affect us in 4 to 5 years. I think the biggest thing for hospitals and healthcare systems in general is the integration of technology. So we've worked really, really hard on our app. And I will tell you, as a user of our app in the last couple months, I've used it a fair amount of times. There's almost nothing I can do as it relates to administering our health plan, or as far as using our health plan, I can find a doctor. I can know immediately whether that doctor is tier one, tier two, or out of network. I can know roughly what the fees are related to that doctor. I can fill my prescriptions. I can just literally, I know even where my deductibles are and how much, where I am with my out-of-pocket maximum, all those things on my phone. I think all healthcare organizations need to get to the point where the consumer is, from a front-facing standpoint, able to access that type of information super quick and super easy. So I think that's going to be somewhat disruptive in the mm-hmm. short term, because you can do it with everything else, almost any other industry, whether it's Amazon or anything else that we purchase. I think healthcare has been slow to evolve as it relates to some of the tech-related support of decision-making. And I think that's a big, exciting opportunity for us as healthcare providers.
As far as the tech and that app you just mentioned, if somebody has a Blue Cross or United plan, do they just enter that up front, or how does that know, like, kind of where you stand with regards to whatever your employer benefits are at that time?
Yeah, currently our app is specific to the Baylor Scott & White Health Plan. We've got, I think, several hundred thousand members. Mm-hmm. It actually is one of the highest rated healthcare apps on the Apple App Store right now, which is
awesome.
To me, kind of cool. I'm thinking, okay, something I have in my pocket and use every now and then is highly rated on the App Store, but it's also locally developed, which is exciting. And so it currently, to my knowledge, doesn't interface with other plans, mm-hmm. but is a benefit to the folks that sign up with the Baylor Scott & White plans.
Gotcha. Well, we can wrap up on this question. I know Baylor does a ton of community endeavors. Can you talk to that a little bit, and how, if somebody did want to get involved, how they would go about doing that? And we can wrap up there.
Sure. I think, we do a lot of community related work. So we've got a lot of very unique studies and things that are going on. One of the first things that we did several years back was launch a diabetes health and wellness center in a part of Dallas that really needed healthcare services, had almost nothing. And the program in and of itself has been absolutely fantastic, but there's a lot of volunteer needs related to the work that goes on there. We've recently launched a program with community healthcare workers that is mostly based in Dallas and Garland at this time, but will likely expand just because the outcomes that we've seen in reducing hospital visits and improving the overall health of the patients that those community healthcare workers are serving has been dramatic. The improvements have been dramatic. And so I think that's very exciting. Even at the local level, there's volunteer opportunities even within the hospital, but we do community events, health screenings, all kinds of other programs all the time. We even do business-focused healthcare screenings for businesses that want to increase employee awareness to their numbers, whether it be blood pressure, diabetes, those types of things. And so there's always a lot of opportunities, I think, to be involved. And we're certainly open to talking to any organization and any individuals that are interested in helping improve the overall health and wellness of the community.
Awesome. Well, seriously, thank you for coming on, Mike.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in. If you enjoyed the podcast, we'd love if you subscribe, leave a review, and share the show with a friend. Thanks again, and we will see you next time on Healthy Conversations.